this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Vincent Hughes, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Hughes at any point this evening, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. If you have a question for Senator Hughes, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. And now with that out of the way, I'd like to welcome Senator Vincent Hughes.
Hey, Hugh, thanks for hosting this call with me. Thanks for all my constituents for participating tonight's call. Of course, some of the best feedback we get is from forums like this telephone town hall or community forums or things of that nature. This is my live telephone town hall where we're going to be discussing Governor Wolf's budget address, how we organize our communities for action. We got a lot of anger out there, but now we got to turn it into action. Give you an update on a number of things that have occurred in Harrisburg. Gosh, in the first 10 days that we've been in session, it's been rock and roll. It really has been attack on people. And remember, you can listen, but while you're listening, if you want to ask a question, press star 3 on your phone, and that'll give you an opportunity to get into the queue to ask your question. Hugh? You ready to go?
We're ready to roll. Senator, while we have people who are joining us and coming online and getting everybody screened so I have an opportunity to talk to you, let's talk first about the governor presented his budget spending plan for the fiscal year, over the next fiscal year. Can you talk a little bit about that and give some details? And then we'll get into some of
the issues that
dealt with today and earlier this week.
Well, look, okay, so yesterday, Tuesday, the governor introduced his budget proposal for the next fiscal year, which starts on July 1 of 2017 and goes to June 30th of 2018. He started in a very difficult position because the state is running about a $3 billion budget deficit. When you add money that's in the hole now in this fiscal year and what's projected for in the next fiscal year. So we got about a $3 billion budget deficit, and the governor's budget in a difficult environment where he really has worked to, in this budget proposal, try to keep his priorities going forward. Priorities like education. There's another increase in education spending in this budget proposal. And as you remember, everybody remembers that the previous governor, who served for 4 years, really cut education funding, basic education funding, by about $1 billion. So Governor Wolf's program has been to try to restore that funding and to make sure those monies get to disadvantaged schools who've been suffering so dramatically for underfunding. So he's trying to add about $200 million for basic education funding because we got a tight budget. And I got to keep underscoring everybody because we got a $3 billion budget deficit. We've only been able to increase spending for our state system universities and higher education. So Cheney, Westchester, Millersville, Kutztown, Bloomsburg, Indiana University, and I'm not going to try to name all 14 because I'll forget somebody, but those universities got about a $9 billion increase all total, but Penn State, Temple, Pitt, and Lincoln Universities are being flat funded, so there will be no increase for those universities this year. When it comes to job creation and job and economic development, the governor has basically continue to fund a number of the state's economic development and job creation programs at last year's level. No cuts there, which is a positive thing, although we do need some increases in those areas. And he's made our tax credit program where businesses get tax credits based on various jobs and other things that they achieve, that they jobs create or other objectives that they achieve. He's reduced the funding into our tax credit program. So there's going to be a challenge there. He has moved in the positive towards advocating for an increase in the minimum wage from its current $7.25 an hour to $12 an hour. As everyone remembers, the governor's original position was $7.25 an hour to $10.10 an hour. He's moved up to $12 an hour. That's a positive direction. It's been since, my God, it's been 2006, when the minimum wage was last increased in Pennsylvania, 2006. In our human service programs, most of them have been flat funded, which means they haven't been cut, which is positive. We've gotten dollars to go in there, and maybe some small increases in certain areas. As you know, the governor and all of us have been very concerned about this opioid addiction, this heroin addiction problem. The governor is driving more money into the state's opioid and heroin addiction program, which is a good thing. But everything else is kind of like on an even keel, again, because we've got this huge budget deficit. One of the things in terms of streamlining state government, streamlining how the government operates and making it smarter, the governor, as folks may have seen in the newspaper, has discussed merging a number of different departments. He wants to continue to merge the Department of Corrections and the Department of Probation and Parole in terms into one department called the Department of Criminal Justice. The governor also wants to merge four major departments: Department of Health and Human Services, which is, used to be the old Department of Public Welfare, wants to, with Department of Health, Department of Aging, and Department of Drug and Alcohol. So he wants to take all those four agencies and put them into one. We're going to be asking those folks a lot of questions to make sure that that actually makes sense and that works. Because each one of those agencies is important. The Department of Aging, of course, handles all of our senior citizens programs, and we want to make sure that those are not hurt in any way, shape, or form. And, of course, the Department of Health and Human Services handles all of our, it's the largest agency in the state of Pennsylvania. It handles all of the programs for low-income individuals, from cash grants, which we don't have too much of anymore, to our Medicaid and Medicaid assistance programs. All of those programs are handled by the Department of Human Services. So the governor's talking about making the state work smarter, streamlining those activities, and making it work a lot more efficient. The governor is talking about raising some additional dollars through some tax increases, and these tax increases largely on the corporate side. As he's not advocating for a personal income tax increase, and he's not advocating for a sales tax increase. But he is advocating, again, for a Marcellus Shale tax. Again, we're the only state in the nation that does not have a Marcellus Shale tax. The only state in the nation that does not have a Marcellus Shale tax is Pennsylvania. And we have the largest deposit of natural gas under our ground in Pennsylvania than any other state in the nation. But we don't tax it. We don't get our due returns out of that shale drilling. And we wind up subsidizing other businesses by personal income taxes that we pay and by taxes that our other corporations, our smaller businesses pay. They wind up subsidizing the tax burden that the big shale drillers are not paying. So he is advocating for that. He's advocating for a closing of something called the Delaware loophole. As a lot of folks know, a lot of big businesses set up their corporate headquarters in Delaware, even though they're operating in Pennsylvania. The governor wants to close that loophole and make those individuals pay Pennsylvania taxes, because when they set up their corporate headquarters in Delaware, and quite frankly, a lot of those setups in Delaware are really just P.O. boxes. Okay, they're not full establishments. They're not full business sites. They're really post office boxes. And I'm told there's a couple locations in the state of Delaware that have thousands of post office boxes located in them. And they're the post. They're the addresses of some of the largest corporations in the state. So folks are escaping paying. Businesses are escaping paying their Pennsylvania tax responsibility by setting up these P.O. boxes in Delaware. The governor wants to close that loophole, bring them back to Pennsylvania, and have them pay their fair share here in Pennsylvania. So that's the broad strokes on the governor's budget proposal. The Appropriations Committee begins its hearings for each one of the departments in 2 weeks, beginning the week of the 20th, well, after President's Day. We'll start that Tuesday the 21st. We'll go for 3 weeks. We will post the dates and the times for all of the appropriations hearings for each department on our website, which is senatorhughes.com. at SenatorHughes.com. We'll post those, probably have those posted tomorrow, so you can go to the website and find out. We'll also be streaming each of the hearings, so you can watch them on your phone, or watch them on your desktop, or your laptop, or whatever kind of technology that you might have. But that's not the only thing that we've been dealing with.
Right. Before we get that, just
before
as a reminder,
star three. If you've got a question, press star three. If you've got a question, press star three, and that'll get you into the queue, and we'll start answering questions in about 2 or 3 minutes. But in addition to the governor's budget address, which was yesterday, what we've also seen happening in Harrisburg is the craziness that's been happening in Washington, D.C.,
right,
has now migrated up the turnpike to the interstate up to Pennsylvania. And the far-right guys have, and the Trump heads have now, I said it,
right,
okay, the Trump heads in Washington have migrated their activities up to Pennsylvania. So what does that mean? Today was a really bad day for everybody. In fact, yesterday and today were really bad days for everybody. Yesterday, the Senate passed Senate Bill 10, and everybody should be writing this down and making notes. The Senate passed Senate Bill 10, which eliminated the sanctuary city provisions for any community in the state of Pennsylvania. Any community in the state of Pennsylvania, which basically means that if you call yourself a sanctuary city, or if you call yourself a sanctuary community, you will not receive state dollars, okay? The city of Philadelphia, which is under the leadership of Mayor Kenney, which has made itself open and friendly to individuals, would lose about $1.6 billion of state support to the city of Philadelphia. But we're not the only ones hurt. Half the counties in Pennsylvania have some form of designation as a sanctuary city. About 32 counties in Pennsylvania have some form of designation as a sanctuary community. They also will lose state funding. So it's a bad day around that issue. It's an additionally bad day, so that was Senate Bill 10.
Right.
That was yesterday.
Yesterday.
Then comes today.
How about today? What
then comes today?
Today,
all right? Senate Bill 3. Everybody make note, because all of these bills are going over to the House of Representatives. And you need to be in the business of calling your state legislator or your friend's state legislators and raising holy hell, and I said it, raising holy hell about these issues. Senate Bill 3 passed out of the Senate today. That restricted women's access to reproductive health care services and to abortions, all right? All these guys on the Florida Senate making decisions about women having control of their own bodies, all right? And it was terrible. It was a terrible day. It was a terrible vote. This is the bill that we believe that was passed, we believe is unconstitutional. The similar bills in other states have been ruled unconstitutional. We believe Senate Bill 3 is unconstitutional. The governor has already said he would veto the bill. In fact, there's a video, there's a short video of him online right now that says Senate Bill 3 is terrible and he will veto the bill. But you need to call your legislators and tell them that this is bad stuff. So that's on the women. So the hard right knuckleheads from Washington migrated themselves to Pennsylvania and now have attacked women. Okay? Now, then there's Senate Bill 166.
Right.
Write it down, people. All right? Make note about this. Senate Bill 166 eliminates the state's responsibility of collecting union dues for state employees, all right? So what does that mean? A short translation, it's attack on organized labor, it's attack on unions, it's an attack on working people. It shuts down the voice of working people. And some folks have said that, well, we can't spend that kind of money for the state to collect these fees and pass them on. Well, we have a treasurer's note from June of 2014 that says it only costs the state $100 to process all of this work across the state of Pennsylvania. $100 all total. So it can't be about saving money. It has to be a tax on working individuals. And that's what we called it. We called it for what it is, and that's the deal. So keep an eye out on Senate Bill 166. And then,
right.
just because they hadn't had enough, they come back and they pass Senate Bill 241, which is the pay equity bill. As folks know, in the city of Philadelphia, we passed a pay equity provision to try to drive women's pay up to the level as men. Women generally are paid 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. And I got that, I have that number right. 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. Well, and so the city of Philadelphia it made an effort to try to equate, try to get some equality there. Well, the bill that passed today, Senate Bill 241, eliminated that provision and made it weaker to enforce it. Okay? They tried to make it a statewide provision. Of course, they introduced no legislation to
right.
make it statewide. Said local communities cannot have their own pay equity provisions, and lessened the amount of enforcement available. So, a tax on women, a tax on working people, a tax on immigrant communities, and the whole issues around search and seizure and right to move to and fro through the sanctuary city provision, attack on communities. The hard right has set foot in Pennsylvania. And you all need to understand that. You all need to be clear about that. And we're expecting folks to, you know, we got to organize on this stuff and push back on this. We're not dealing with just what's going on in Washington, D.C. Now that we're back in session in Pennsylvania, we're dealing with it in Pennsylvania. So those are the pieces that happen in all, and we've only been in session for 10 days.
10 days,
all right? No public hearings of any extent on any of the issues that I just talked about. Attacks on women, attacks on working people, just attacks across the board. We've got to organize ourselves to advance on these attacks on people who are just average, everyday Pennsylvania citizens. So, Hugh, how about we take? I'm gonna take a break. You want to start taking some calls?
We're gonna take some calls now. But just as a reminder, for those that just joined us or based on Senator Hughes' discussion, if you have some questions for the senator, press *3 on your phone's keypad. You press *3 on your phone's keypad. Let's go to
Lois.
We're gonna go to Lois. Lois, go. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Lois in West Philly. How you doing, Lois?
How you doing, Senator?
I'm doing good.
You're still on the case, and we love you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I work in the area of aging, but I also am affiliated with working with the Office of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disabilities.
Uh-huh.
And the way the organization looks that's being proposed, it really divides those out and makes them less effective. Now, I wanted to hear what you have to say about that.
What I need to do, Lois, and it would be really helpful if you call Tiffany Wilson in my district office, all right, and that number is 215-889-7777. What is going to happen is when the various secretaries for these proposed merged agencies come in front of the Appropriations Committee, we're going to have the opportunity to publicly ask questions of them to answer some of the kinds of issues that you just raised. But what I need you to do is to reach out to Tiffany and then give her the details of what you see might occur in this merger if it's not done correctly. You follow me? So, because you're on the front line, you know the good information that we need to know. We're very concerned about this merger. We're concerned about whether it will reduce or increase the effectiveness of how the state operates and how the state services people. And it's information that you might have because, as I said, you're on the front line that would be helpful to us as we question these secretaries about what it is that they intend to do. We're concerned. We need the details that you might have to help us translate those concerns and get some good questions. So, Lois, if you could give Tiffany a call, 215-879-7777, that would be real good, all right?
Lois, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. But, again, if you have a question for Senator Hughes, press *3 on your phone's keypad. We're going to go to Leslie and Ambler. Leslie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Yes, Senator
Hughes.
Hey,
Leslie, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. I am very concerned, of course, about what is going on in the country, as well as Pennsylvania. I am a small business owner. I have been in business for 26 years. I pay all of my employees, men or women. I don't have that many, by the way. It's not like I have a ton of them, but they, men and women, make the same amount for the same jobs. We are a family-owned and operated company. I was listening to you, and when you were talking about the post office boxes in Delaware, I have heard of that, but I couldn't believe it sounded like the scope is quite huge, which means I'm paying their taxes from my business.
Sure. Yes,
and
you are.
I'm like, excuse me? I hire people. I pay them well. Even though I'm a small business owner, I always start them. $7.25? Are you kidding me? I started 26 years ago. I never paid anyone like that. So to me, that's just amazing. But these post office boxes, why has nothing been done about that if people have known that it's not just a few, which I thought it probably was, though I know that people are taking businesses out of the country like crazy and jobs out of the country. Sure. However, I did not realize that Pennsylvania companies were going to Delaware in mass amounts.
What has happened, Lois? It's a hole in the tax structure in Pennsylvania. It's been around for decades,
right.
And it allows for corporations to set, because Delaware has no tax. It allows for those corporations to set up a for lack of a better term, a dummy headquarters in the state of Delaware, and avoid paying state taxes. So your business really is subsidizing the tax payments that those corporations should have been paying here. We've been advocating for this issue. I mean, going back, I guess, at least since Governor Rendell, and probably earlier than that. Governor Rendell was 2003. To close what it's called the Delaware loophole, all right? And what we've said is if we are able to close the Delaware loophole, and we're losing hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Do we have an exact figure on that?
I think it's over $400 million. I think the Governor Rendell's task force, it was well over
$400 million. So the analysis is about $400 million that is lost to Pennsylvania because these companies are avoiding paying their fair share of taxes here in Pennsylvania. The idea is to close the Delaware loophole, bring that money back to Pennsylvania, contribute a portion of that money to the state's coffers and to invest in the other things that are important, and also to reduce the corporate net income tax. That's the governor's budget proposal, incrementally over a few years. That would improve the business climate in Pennsylvania. That would make it more fair for those who are paying. But it is a loophole that's been around for decades. Before I even started here in Harrisburg, that loophole has been in place, and it's been very hard to close that because, obviously, if you close it, folks are going to have to pay, a business is going to have to pay taxes that they, and these are wealthy businesses, they would have to pay taxes that they never historically pay. So, Leslie, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling. Who do we have next?
We're going to go to Judith next, but before we do that, if you have a question for Senator Hughes, press *3. We'll get you in the line and talk to Senator Hughes. We're going to go to Judith in Upper Dublin. Judith, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Hey, Judith, how are you?
Okay. Hi. Fine. I'm because of where, because we're Democrats here. We're in your district, and Madeline Deans and Brendan Boyles, and
yeah.
I'm getting things on Facebook where people are saying, do you know what they introduced now? And I'm wondering if I just contact your representative, and if I'm preaching to the choir, then is that doing any good? Or it doesn't do any good for me? Can I contact a different representative who,
absolutely,
you know, try and influence them?
Well, so far, in our definition of America, so far, you can contact anyone you want to contact. Now,
yeah, but do they pay attention to it? That's what I'm...
Yeah, they do. Yeah, yes, they do. The best thing to do is if you can have someone that you know in their district, okay, communicate to that legislator or to that senator, because then they identify that individual as an actual constituent. We have good technology in our offices so that when people call in, we can determine pretty quickly where those folks are residing, if they're constituents, if they're not constituents, even if they're registered to vote.
Right.
We can make that determination. And it's public technology. It's not something that's nefarious or private. It's public technology. So the best thing to do is to contact someone that is a constituent of another senator or another legislator and have them make the call. One of the things that's important is we pride ourselves in our office of getting out a lot of information to people so that folks are fully informed, know what's going on, have a good understanding of what's going on. And not all of the elected officials do that. So one thing that can happen is just by using the information that we have, spread it to others so the others can see what is exactly going on, because their representative may not provide the same level of detail, the same level of information. But just stay connected, stay engaged, don't give up, keep fighting, keep pushing. You know, we have a vision for our state and our nation that I think everyone can agree to, but we also know what seems to be coming the other way, and it is not a pretty picture. It is not a pretty picture. Limiting workers from eliminating their voice on how things occur on their work site, limiting women's reproductive health care services and what they have available to them and what they can do is not a good thing. Shutting down cities from being welcome and secure based on how we treat other folks, limiting our ability to do that is not a good thing. And that's the vision that we have to fight against, and we have to drive towards what it is that we know is right and fair for all people. So thank you very much.
Judith, thank you very much. Senator, we're going to go to Mary in Winston Hill.
I live in Winfield area.
Hey, Mary from Winfield.
Hi, how you doing there, Senator Hughes?
I'm doing fine.
Okay, I live right in your area. Right, at 5614 Gaynor, right up the street.
There you go. All right.
Okay, what my question is, with merging these other organizations, these other jobs, I wrote them down, Aging Human Services and all the other agencies that they have, won't that incur layoffs, or be able to use all your employees in each, you know? With merging, seem like that is cutting back.
What we've asked, and the governor had in his public statement has said that his intention is to minimize the amount of layoffs that would occur with a merger, right? But that he wanted to streamline how things were flowing and making sure that that agencies, you know, a lot of these agencies don't talk to each other like they should, and he's trying to encourage more direct communication. A lot of these agencies, for example, will have a regulation authority over an entity, and what we found is that some of them give conflicting information to a particular entity, and so we need to get that streamlined. But what we need to do and get that consistent, you can't have one bureau in an agency say one thing and another bureau in an agency say something completely different on the same issue. So we got to rectify and reconcile all of that. Now, let's be clear. This is the stuff that's going to come up when we have our hearings, and we're going to be asking hard questions, because the last thing we want to do is unnecessarily put people out of work. We want to make the state work smarter. We want to make the state work more efficient. We don't want to be in the business of throwing hundreds or thousands of people out of work. That's the thing we have to protect against. So thank you very much.
Mary, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go to Robert. Robert, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
What's up, Robert? How are you?
I'm very discouraged, but still willing to fight. Thank you for asking, Senator.
Thank you.
Question, and that is that you've mentioned four areas in which it has been bad day at BlackRock. the abortion issue, the sanctuary city issue, the labor issue, and meaning union dues. I'm sorry, I forgot the fourth one. In all those, do the Republicans have a veto-proof majority in either house? If they do override a governor's veto, what are the courts available for redress? And if the courts aren't available for redress, what is there any other plan?
Well, the in the Senate, there is a majority of Republicans in the Senate that can override a governor's veto, and that is not the case in the House. However, some of these issues are contentious enough that even with a count of 34 to 16, which is what it is in the 34 Republicans and 16 Democrats in the Senate, some of these issues are so contentious that we might be able to get some of the Republican senators to not override a governor's veto. But it really depends upon how much the public wants to engage on all this stuff. It really, really, really is important. Public engagement still has an impact. What we know is folks are extremely angry about these and other kinds of issues. We saw that with the Women's March. We saw that 2 weekends ago on the travel ban issue. We saw that in the March on Washington with the National Action Network. We saw that in the impromptu march that occurred in Philadelphia on Thursday and Friday, when Republicans were in Philadelphia for their retreat, and Trump came to visit, and thousands of people showed up and protested. We've seen it all across the state. I stood with some folks in front of Senator Toomey's office up here in Harrisburg. Because they have a thing called Tuesdays with Toomey, okay, up here in Harrisburg, because he has a office up here in Harrisburg, Senator Toomey, when they were protesting the cuts on the Affordable Care Act, and all these other appointments that are going down. So that's impromptu. These things are happening by individuals who normally don't get involved. What we're asking people is to continue to protest, continue to engage with their legislator and their senator, and register to vote. What elected officials understand more than anything is they understand who's registered and who's not. And we got to promote democracy as much as possible. You've got to be registered to vote, because they can ignore your voice from a protest, but if they look on the list and they see, wow, on Tuesday, 1,000 more people registered to vote in my district, and on Wednesday, 500 more people are registered to vote in my district. If they see that happening, that's going to put a bug in their ear, and they're going to respond a lot differently. But we got to turn our anger into action. And I would ask folks, speaking of that, you know, Hugh, we have a forum coming up on March 1st, mm-hmm, called Turning Anger to Action. We're locking down a location. It'll be in the evening. So just ask folks to make a note of Senator Hughes' community forum, Turning Anger to Action, where we provide some direct information on how to take all this passion and get people involved.
And you have that on your website. I'm sure you'll do an e-blast.
Oh, yeah.
Electronically.
Yeah.
So folks want to sign up for your electronic email. That's a good way to
Exactly. We're locking down a location. We found some locations that could fit a couple hundred people, but we have feelings that this could go to 500, 600, 700, 800, maybe even 1,000 people. So we got to find the right size location, but we're definitely going to make this happen on March 1st. Mm-hmm. So go to my website, senatorhughes.com. Senatorhughes.com is the website. You can sign up for our e-blasts, which are pretty frequent, all right? And, of course, you can always follow me on Twitter at Senator Hughes. I am the certified coolest elected official Twitterer in the land. We've certified that.
That's
want you to know.
Exactly right. Robert, thank you very much for your question. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Jackie from West Philadelphia. Jackie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Hello?
That's good. Jackie,
hey, Jackie, how are you?
Good evening, Senator Hughes. I would like you to make it crystal clear about Senate Bill number 10, or can I get that information from your website?
You can get
it. Because it's a vague bill. It's very vague. Can you make it clearer?
What it does is, without going into a whole lot of detail, it limits the rights of women to get an abortion here in Pennsylvania, and it takes it down from 24 to 20 weeks, okay? And then it criminalizes an abortion provider and a person who has a service after the 20-week period, all right? If you go to my website, let me just say go to it tomorrow, all right? I'll make sure that everything is posted on the website tomorrow. Now, do we have this posted on the Democratic Senate website?
Information will be posted. It will be posted on pasenate.com under the legislative side. You can click down and find out information about the bill there. There's been a number of statements that have been issued on it as well.
Right.
That also available. There's video from the Senate floor debate. Your Senate floor debate will be posted there. So folks will have
access. So wait till tomorrow to go to either my website, senatorhughes.com, or pasenate.com.
Yeah, that's correct.
All right? But wait till tomorrow. We got to give time. There's a lot of information we want to post on the website, including video remarks and things of that nature. So we want to make sure that you wait till tomorrow. But it begins the assault on women and their ability to control their own bodies, or it continues the assault on women and their ability to control their own bodies.
Senator, we want to go back just a bit. Can you explain a little bit about the sanctuary city legislation
that
passed? I know there's some concerns, some confusion. That'll help the folks that have joined us here tonight before we pick up the next call.
Okay. So, without getting to a whole bunch of detail, because there's a lot involved in this, right? So right now, the federal government has the ability through the immigration office, which is called ICE, okay, for that, again, I'm trying to keep this as simple as possible, to issue requests to local law enforcement authorities, local police departments, to detain someone because they want to question, the federal folks want to question somebody. And so what the mayor in Philadelphia and 31 other counties around the state of Pennsylvania said, well, you know what, we're not going to unnecessarily detain folks at your request, because these lists of detainers, they're just a list of individuals who somebody somewhere has put on a list. They're not put on a list by a judge. They're not put on a list by a hearing officer or anything like that. Their list of people just comes up. We've had incidents where people have been inappropriately detained. They wind up being American citizens, and they've been inappropriately detained, and they've sued the local government and won significant cash awards. We've had circumstances of people who have been detained for over 7 months, and they were American citizens, and they were held for over 7 months. Now, when I say held, I mean in the jail, okay, for over 7 months. So the federal government has the responsibility of tightening up this process and this procedure. We want to make sure our communities are safe, but at the same time, we want to make sure that that people maintain their civil liberties, because if this is done inappropriately, if it's done wrong, then what you can have is a potential attack on people and folks just being rounded up and held, all right, for 24 hours or 48 hours against their will, and then you wind up finding out there was no reason for them to be held in the first place. So, again, go to our website tomorrow. You'll see information about Senate Bill 10. You'll see video of floor speeches and comments. It's a controversial issue. It really should be handled at the national level. It is a program that 32 counties in Pennsylvania have adopted sanctuary cities and adopted sanctuary city status. It can be a gut check on the issues around civil liberties. But I think it's an appropriate thing to work through to try to get to the best policy. What it passed out of the Senate yesterday, we think is bad policy.
Thank you, Senator, for the explanation. I hope that
clears up some questions I know that we see. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Larry. Larry, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Larry calling from Winfield. What's up, Larry?
What's going on, Senator Hughes?
I'm great, man. You all right?
I'm all right. And first and foremost, I want to thank you for all that you do for us on a city, state, and federal level, and for being the voice for all of us, especially when it comes to things like education.
Yes,
and
sir.
My question is, what are the chances that the governor's proposed increase for education at Apache schools will actually pass through the Senate, especially with the huge budget deficit that we're facing right now?
Well, I think the good thing, Larry, and thanks for asking that question, the good thing, Larry, is that he started off the budget negotiations with a foundation that he wanted to spend about 2.5% more for the state system universities. And so that's always good when you have a budget negotiation that the chief guy to the governor, he's starting off on the right foot, okay? He wants an increase because that's only good for those state system universities. You know the 14 state system universities, and so folks understand, it's Cheney, Westchester, Millersville, Kutztown, Bloomsburg, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, and I'm going to stop right there because I'm not going to remember all of them. But they are low-cost, high-quality schools that about 100,000 students, mostly Pennsylvania residents, choose to attend. So they're lower cost, high quality. You get a great education. A lot of great people graduated from these state system schools and have gone on to make some incredible accomplishments and contributions to the rest of society. So he's starting off with a good benefit there. He's also advocating, just so that you're aware, Larry, and the rest of the callers, he's also advocating for a $500,000 additional grant for Cheney University for its honors program, which takes some top quality students from across the state, drives them to an honors program, and just so that everyone understands, because everybody talks bad about Cheney, the honors program at Cheney University is one of the highest ranking honors programs of any HBCU in the nation and competes on a very good level with all honors programs in all universities. So it's a great program. The governor's seen fit to reward that program with an extra $500,000 appropriation, and we think that is the foundation for turning Cheney University around. So, but if we don't advocate for it, Larry, if folks don't advocate for that kind of expenditure for our state system universities, it's not going to survive. We got to advocate for it. We cannot be silent. We got to stand up and say this is important. We need this kind of investment. So thanks for the call, Larry.
Larry, thank you very much for the call. Senator, we're going to turn here a little bit, and we're going to go to Barry in West Philadelphia. Barry, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Good afternoon, Senator Hughes. How are you, my friend?
What's going on, Barry? How you doing, man?
I'm blessed, my brother.
Talk to me.
Well, the most concerning thing right now for me is early voting. I sure would like to know where Governor Wolf stands on that. In Pennsylvania, sold to the polls early Sundays, and, you know, various things like that. We need that.
I'm glad you asked that question, Barry. And I'm glad I got Hugh here because Hugh was working with our caucus in terms of putting what we call a democracy package of legislation together. Early voting, mm-hmm. All right, 2 weeks before Election Day. All right, so you can start voting, all right? Registration, automatic registration when kids graduate high school, assuming that they're 18 years of age. They get a high school diploma, they're automatically registered to vote at the mm-hmm. same time. Automatic voter registration for when anyone who interacts with state government, they're automatically registered to vote. If you get your driver's license at the state, if you get your birth certificate at the state, all right, if you're a family member, not for the little boy baby, you, but for you get mom and dad, they get the birth certificate. Well, they're automatically registered to vote, you know. Any interaction for your state grant, mm-hmm. if you interact with the state, you get a state grant to go to college. You get your voter registration. If you apply for your public assistance benefits, you're automatically registered to vote. We're trying to encourage democracy. We call it our democracy package, and we're trying to encourage that, engage that. I'm hoping that we can roll that out in the next couple of weeks so that it'll be a statewide rollout, because we know Senator Fontana is interested in this stuff, and a number of members across the state are interested in promoting democracy. So, Barry, stay attention to that. Stay focused on that. I'm glad you raised that, because we got to get more people involved in the process as opposed to less.
Barry, thank you very much. Then we're going to go turn and we're going to go to Shonda. Shonda, you have a question for Senator Hughes?
Yes. Hi, good evening, Senator Hughes. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Shonda. How you doing?
All right. Yes, my question is, I know they just put in a new Secretary of Education, and I wanted to know how is that going to affect our state, but specifically our Philadelphia public schools.
Well, we are very concerned about the new Secretary of Education in Washington, D.C. If you watch the hearings, she clearly was, at best, not prepared for the hearings, and at worst, didn't know a lot about basic education policy, all right? She didn't know that the Disabilities Act, which is a federal law, there's no option whether it can be enforced. You have to enforce the Disabilities Act in our schools. This provides some significant level of guarantee that disabled children get a high-quality education and are not discriminated against in our schools. She had no clue on that issue. She talked about guns. It's okay to have guns in schools. And she mentioned, you're going to get me going the whole rest of the program. She mentioned about the school in Montana that they might need to have guns in the schools in Montana because they got grizzly bears in Montana. No, you don't have guns in the schools because of the grizzly bears. Oh, it was bizarre. I think, remember, she's from Michigan, very wealthy woman from Michigan, spent $200 million, as Senator Sanders said at the hearing. Since you don't know anything about education policy, we assume that you're here because you gave over $200 million in campaign contributions to a bunch of my colleagues. And she didn't have much of a response to that, all right? We know, but what we're asking folks is to pay attention to what happened in the city of Detroit. The education secretary, because she's from Michigan, of course Detroit is in Michigan, when she was just doing philanthropy work, was a significant contributor to the demise of public education in the city of Detroit. A significant contributor to the demise of public education in Detroit. We're struggling with our schools right now. We're trying to get an upswing in new funding for our schools, trying to make sure our schools are doing better in a number of different areas. We cannot have someone at the federal level be part of destroying public education, not just in Philadelphia, but for low-income school districts all across the state of Pennsylvania. It will be unacceptable. We are very concerned, and we need everybody to have an eagle-eye watch and an eagle-eye analysis of what is happening with her.
Shonda, thank you very much for your question. Senator, before we go back to the callers, I want to go. We've had a number of folks submit questions online. I'm going to take a question now from Janet. Janet has a question about block grants and some of the proposals coming out of Washington. But I want to expand a little bit more about the Affordable Care Act and its impact on Pennsylvania and get your thoughts on that.
The Affordable Care Act, and we took a leadership role here in Pennsylvania of trying to get Medicaid expansion done in Pennsylvania. And again, I use this as an example that voting does work. All right, because if you remember, when President Obama passed the Affordable Care Act, got it signed into law, when it was approved by the U.S. Supreme Court, the previous governor, Governor Corbett, did not want to implement all aspects of the Affordable Care Act. We told him to implement it. He said no. We told him to implement it. He said no. We told him to implement it. He filed a lawsuit, all right, against the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. He lost the lawsuit. He lost the lawsuit, and then he lost his election, his reelection. We put Tom Wolf in as a result of urging myself and a number of my colleagues. Within, I guess it was probably 3 months, Wolf began implementing all aspects of the Affordable Care Act. As a result of that, 700,000 additional Pennsylvania residents have health insurance that did not have it before, all right? Remember that 700,000 additional Pennsylvania residents have health insurance that didn't have it before, and well over a million or so Pennsylvania residents have been impacted in a positive way by the Affordable Care Act. So it's been hugely great. Voting matters. The old governor didn't want to implement it. We got rid of him. The new governor implemented it, and now 700,000 new people, a million or so other folks had positive impact. Thousands of people have been employed as a result of that, now working in the healthcare field. It's been extremely positive. We've got to make sure that the folks in Washington, D.C. get the message. We're not talking about repeal, all right? We're not talking about repeal. Unacceptable. It's got to be about improving what President Obama already put into place with the Affordable Care Act. Not about repealing it. It's got to be about improving it. It's not perfect, but it's a whole lot better than what the Republicans in Washington, D.C. have been talking about lately.
Janet, thank you very much for submitting that question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. Let's go to Carolyn. Carolyn, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Hi, Senator. How are you?
How are you?
My question is in reference, you mentioned there was a proposal on the table to merge four entities, I guess, Department of Human Services and services
aging,
that impact seniors.
Drug and alcohol, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, my question is there a task force already set up? And if so, is there going to be a rollout on any of the websites, you know, mentioning these four entities with maybe their current budget, current number of employees, and the goal of the whole program?
Well, what we're going to do, Carolyn, if pay attention to my website, SenatorHughes.com. To do this, the governor has to have legislative approval to do this merger. Am I right, Hugh?
Yes.
He's got to have legislative. He cannot just sign a piece of paper and it's done. He's got to have legislative approval. What will happen is at the beginning, the appropriations committees will have public hearings, as I said earlier, will have public hearings, will bring all those department secretaries in so that they can explain to the members of the Senate and to the public at large what the plan is. Will there be job loss? How will services be impacted? And on and on and on. And then I'm sure there'll be more community forums and things like that across the state. And we probably should convene one of those in the city, okay, in the district, around this issue of how this all works out, because we don't want to have anything that's going to reduce the services to folks. We want to make sure that it streamlines and it works more efficiently, and we can solve people's problems much quicker. So just pay attention to our website, SenatorHughes.com, or if you want, just call my office, 215-879-7777, 215-879-7777. Probably ask to speak to Tiffany Wilson, all right? And she'll be able to keep you updated, or anyone updated, on what's going on with this. And again, when we have the appropriations hearings, which will be in the next couple of weeks, with the four departments, they'll be streamed, live streamed on our website, SenatorHughes.com.
Carolyn, thank you very much. Senator, we're going to go to Kathleen from Overbrook, who has a minimum wage question. Kathleen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Hughes.
Hi, Senator. Thank you so very much for all that you do and all that you have done.
Thank you, Kathleen.
My question about the minimum wage, you said that Governor Wolf would like to raise the minimum wage not from $7.25 but to $12?
Yeah.
Okay, and my question to that is, with the minimum wage being $12, and my thinking on the minimum wage is always has been, that is for the children who are in high school, get that job after school to make their ends meet, to pay for the prom, and blah, blah, blah. What is that $12 minimum wage going to do to the middle class? Is that going to cut the middle class even more?
No, and so what, you know, back in the day, the minimum wage, a lot of minimum wage work was done by students, okay? But unfortunately, the economy has changed so much over the last 20 years or so that there are a lot of people, walking around in our communities, a lot of people who are working. They're working at $7.25 an hour. They're working at $7.50 an hour. They're working at $8 an hour. And as you know, that's all below, for a 40-hour work week, that's all below the federal poverty level. So they're working in poverty, not getting paid an appropriate wage. So all the research indicates that when you raise the minimum wage, in the end, it does not cause a job loss. In fact, it drives wages up for everyone else along the spectrum, okay? And so we believe that a minimum wage increase is appropriate. We believe that, you know, $9 an hour to $12 an hour is a lot to occur in 1 year, all right? It's probably it'd be much more gradual increase over a few years, but that's probably a more responsible thing. But what we need to have happen is we've got to put more dollars in people's pockets. When you put more dollars in people's pockets, especially folks who are working at the low rung of the economic ladder, which is more and more folks, they wind up spending that money immediately right in their own community, all right? All the research indicates that. They're paying their bills, all right? They're buying their food. They're spending it in their local community. And when they spend it in their local community, that is a ripple effect that actually winds up putting more people to work.
Mm-hmm. Senator, thank you very much. We're coming down the home stretch now.
Coming down the home stretch.
I wanted to, for the folks that are here, I just wanted to wrap up. We there's a lot of things happening this week. You gave them some information, and can we just go back over a couple things that you think they would be interested in? We can talk about the event that's coming up for the organization.
Yeah. Well, look, it's been a very difficult week. Thanks for everybody for participating in the call and wanting to stay updated. Been a rough week. It is the state budget come out with a $3 billion budget deficit and some hard choices to make in terms of putting a state budget together, especially with the group of legislators, Republican majorities in the House and the Senate, don't believe that the state has a responsibility to take care of folks who need state support the most. But we'll process that over the next month when we have our appropriations hearings. You can watch our appropriations hearings online. Just go to our website, senatorhughes.com. They start on February 21st, and they go for 3 weeks afterwards. If you go to our website, senatorhughes.com, in about the next 24 hours, you'll get a full listing of every day that the hearings will occur and who's going to be testifying at any given time. The last 2 days, a lot of bad legislation, a lot of hard right legislation, coming out against women with the restriction on abortion rights, against working people with limiting their opportunity to advocate for themselves by limiting by denying the state responsibility to pay their dues through the state payroll system, the whole sanctuary city proposal, and a watering down of the pay equity proposal. So this is what I can say, be real clear, folks, the craziness that you see in Washington, D.C. by the new president has moved itself into Pennsylvania. And it is setting up shop in Pennsylvania, and they got a strong army. But we got a winning army, and all we got to do is fight back. Inviting folks, stay tuned for our Turn into Anger to Action forum on March 1st. Go to my website, senatorhughes.com. We'll have the location shortly. It'll be from 6 to 9 p.m. We'll have the location shortly. March 1st, turning anger to action. And always follow me on Twitter, at Senator Hughes. Call my office, 215-879-7777 is my office number. We're right there on Parkside Avenue, 4950 Parkside Avenue. All right? I think we covered everything. Don't sit on the sidelines, people. You're angry? Make sure that everybody you know is registered to vote. We're in this difficulty right now because someone that we all knew who should have been registered to vote wasn't registered, or if they were registered, they didn't come out and vote. We've got to do our part. We can't worry about anybody else. We've got to do our part in making sure that we turn this anger to action. Vote.gov is a good website to get registered. VotePA.com, VotesPA.com is another good website. And always call my office, 215-879-7777, and ask to speak to Tiffany Wilson.
Right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Remember, if you didn't have a chance to ask Senator Hughes your question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for the Senator, and then we'll get back to you. Senator, it's been a great discussion.
Yes, it has.
Wish everybody a happy
evening. Thank you all for your participation. Stay in touch.